Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. I believe the most important creative element in a classroom is the human element, and I think teachers are the most critical factor there. They are the ones who cultivate a climate of curiosity and creativity. It's a lot of alliteration. And so on this podcast, I share tools and strategies, blueprints, tips and tricks, but I also tell stories and I share the mistakes I made along the way in my journey toward being a more creative teacher as well. And so we're going to be focusing today on makerspaces. I think there's a lot of things that people think of when they hear makerspace. They might think of like a 3D printer, or they might think of a fancy high-tech place. But I actually truly believe that every student deserves a makerspace, that every classroom on some level at some point should be a makerspace. And that what makes something a makerspace is not whether it has the best flexible seating or the fanciest furniture or a 3D printer, but simply that it's a space designed for creativity. It's a space where students truly can develop that maker mindset. Now, before we get started with this, I do want to point out that I have a course that you can take. It's all about how to design your own makerspace. And I also have a free webinar, and it's all about how to design a makerspace in a week. So if you check out the blog post that goes with this podcast, it might be something that you're interested in. It is spencerauthor.com/makerspace-myths. So again, this might be something that you are interested in. So let's go ahead and take a dive into this topic. Now, when I first heard of makerspaces over a decade ago, I wasn't sure what to think about. It was part of this do-it-yourself culture that I found intriguing. But again, I'm not a traditional maker. Like, I'm the person who can't figure out how to put together furniture in, you know, from IKEA, much less, you know, design, you know, physical, tangible products, right? I do a lot of things on you know, other ends, like I've done stuff with coding, or I certainly know a lot about design from a visual element. But what about the products? I wasn't sure about it. But then I visited a few places where people were doing this high-tech fabrication, and I wondered if I could somehow tie that into our economics unit, where students were designing and developing products. And then something happened. I got super frustrated. I had a vision for this really cool classroom makerspace, but I just couldn't pull it off. There were too many moving pieces that I couldn't figure out. Besides, I didn't have the money and the resources to put together this super awesome fab lab type place. I also didn't have all the skills to teach students about the really high-tech side of prototyping. Like, I didn't know a thing about how to do a CAD machine at the time. So I kept it in a private dream space, and I kind of pushed it away. But I would often find myself thinking about a makerspace, dreaming up what that would look like. And then there was a time a few years later when I met my friend Javi. Now, Javier was always asking the question, why not? Why not? Let's figure it out. Why not? Who says we can't? And that was his attitude at all times. So when we didn't have enough computers, he said, why not? What could you do? And I suddenly realized, oh, wait, we could hack old computers and run them on Linux. And so we did. We ran Linux on these computers, and I learned how to transform these old computers into one-to-one computer space. When I said I wanted standing desks, but they were too expensive, Javi responded, where would you stand if the chairs were gone? And from here, I started to think through it and realized that we had these heavy bookshelves that would make perfect standing centers toward the back of the class. And I also learned that not every kid wanted to stand, and that actually a lot of the kids were happy, you know, sitting down. when I, you know, when whenever I would run into these problems, these things that felt insurmountable, Javi would always say, let's make this happen. And there was this point that all these limitations, all these problems, they were the creative constraint that actually led to some really cool ideas. We made better stuff because we had to be resourceful. Now, over the next 3 years, I slowly transformed my classroom into a makerspace. Now, confession here, it never felt like a real makerspace because we never had a 3D printer or the fanciest gadgets, but that was one of the myths that I had. And the longer that I had a makerspace, the more I realized that there are a lot of things we believe about makerspaces that just aren't true. So I want to explore these myths right now. Myth number one, it's about STEM or STEAM, or if you drop the S from it, it could be team, or it could be meat if you drop the science from it and rearrange the letters. I mean, come on, a STEM lab is cool. A STEAM lab is even cooler, but a meat lab, that would be epic. Anyway, too often we associate makerspaces with STEM classes. People think about coding or robotics or 3D prototyping, but I'd argue that we need a bigger definition of making. When students create blogs and podcasts and documentaries, they are experiencing this making. They're growing a maker mindset. In fact, makerspaces can be the perfect context for informational writing and authentic research. The bottom line is, you can do ELA in a makerspace. You can do journalism in a makerspace. I used to teach both a STEM class and a journalism class, and actually taught them in the same physical location because both classes could benefit from a makerspace. The truth is, makerspaces can exist in any subject. If a student is creating, designing, building, problem solving, then guess what? The space is a makerspace. Okay, myth number two, I've kind of alluded to this already, but it's the idea that a makerspace has to be high tech. Now, a makerspace doesn't have to be 100% high tech. For example, kids can prototype on a 3D printer, but sometimes the best technology for iterative thinking is actually duct tape and cardboard. Sometimes hands-on learning actually needs to involve, you know, your own two hands. I tend to think of a makerspace as having three different types of making. There's high tech, which is where they might be doing circuitry, which is inexpensive and pretty awesome. Computers, which can be done very cheaply with something like Raspberry Pi. Coding connected to it. Robotics. I was just doing Lego robotics with my son the other day, and it's a blast. It could be a green screen studio area. They could be recording documentaries, podcasts, things like that. But it could also be low tech. And this is where they might be doing cardboard prototyping, sketchnoting, simple machines, toy hacking, you know, crocheting, I don't know, whatever low tech things, making puppets. And then there's vintage innovation. And this is what happens when you kind of combine the two. Kids might do whiteboard videos or combine sketchnoting with video making. They might take low-tech items to build something quirky with Raspberry Pi or Arduino. They might combine something like a Socratic seminar, which is very vintage, with, you know, audio and a podcast. The point is that with vintage innovation, you're kind of merging those vintage, old, classic ideas with the new ideas. All right, myth number three, it has to be expensive. Now, years ago, I had this mental picture of makerspaces, and they were just packed with the best, latest, greatest technology. And, you know, if you go to maker fairs and stuff like that, you'll often see that. But you'll also see people doing things that didn't cost much money at all. I mean, you see, like I said, things with Raspberry Pi and Arduino. There's a lot of options that are high tech but low cost. And then there's all the low tech things that don't really cost much money at all. And, you know, I wish I had known this from the beginning. I spent forever trying to focus on the funding issues. I thought up ways that we could raise money with online campaigns. I tried applying for grants and failed every single time. I researched high-tech supplies and created spreadsheets of how to get it. And I wrote to companies begging them to send me samples, and none of it worked. I was so obsessed with that aspect of it that I missed a deeper reality, that it's really about the maker mindset. It's not about the space. Yes, the space is where it's happening, and I don't want to minimize the space, but ultimately it's about the thinking. Meanwhile, my students kept making stuff. We transformed our old computers into Linux machines, and in the process, we started getting into coding. We painted murals. We did cardboard prototyping. Now, I never felt comfortable calling it a makerspace, because a real makerspace had to be pretty. It had to be Pinterest-worthy. It had to be the kind of thing that you would share at a conference, and I wasn't about to share that. But then I realized, wait a second. Some of the best items in a makerspace are cheap. They're not super expensive. I could create a green screen studio, and kids could use their own devices to record, or they could share the few ones that we had. We didn't have to have one-to-one of everything perfect. We could rotate and have centers. We could do whiteboard videos. We could do lots and lots of cardboard prototyping. And each year, newer, cheaper, less expensive options came out. And so the reality is, you don't have to have a ton of money to have a makerspace. All right, myth number four, it's completely unstructured. The word makerspace conjures up images of an open, rapid-fire learning where kids are moving around all the time from place to place, but that's only one type of it. The reality is that there's a lot of different structures that can exist within a makerspace. For example, when we use design thinking, we tend to follow a much tighter process than when we do, say, rapid prototyping, where the process is loose. I actually have this grid that kind of takes you from loosely structured to tightly structured on one side, sort of the x-axis, and the y-axis is more short-term to long-term. And what I find interesting is that there are a lot of different pedagogical models that fit in perfectly that are both long-term and short-term. So when people say, I only have a little bit of time, well, guess what? Divergent thinking challenges and rapid prototyping and maker challenges are all great for it. Now, what if you have more time? Well, then it turns out the PBL and design thinking and Genius Hour are all excellent for it. Myth number five is that it's fluff, right? I alluded to this before, but I think there's this misconception that when kids are in a makerspace, they're just playing. People treat it like a bonus room or a reward room. Maybe it's where you take kids on the day that you don't have an elective and you just need a bit of a breather. But I don't like it like that. Makerspaces aren't an escape from learning. They're not bonus activities to fill up extra time. They exist because we are naturally creative, and because being a maker is part of what it means to be a human here on Earth. And I'm guessing it's probably what it means to be a human, you know, on Mars and wherever else we choose to colonize. But the idea is that it is deeply human to be a maker. I believe that creativity and creative thinking are as vital as math or reading or writing. There's power in problem solving and experimenting and taking things from questions to ideas to authentic products that you launch to the world. Something happens in students when they define themselves as makers and inventors and creators. When kids embrace this maker mindset, they learn to think divergently and solve problems by connecting seemingly disconnected ideas. They learn to take creative risks and try new things. They learn to embrace iterative thinking as they move through the creative process. Now, along the way, they experience failures and mistakes, and they start making improvements, and then that's what happens as they develop a growth mindset. They develop grit, not this no-nonsense, compliance-driven, we make no excuses kind of grit, but grit that's actually like your hands are dirty kind of grit. Grit like learning is messy and that's okay kind of grit. It's one of the coolest things about a good makerspace is that the kids are different because they've spent time in there. And they're different because they're getting to engage in this iterative process that doesn't always exist in other areas of schooling. And what's really happening is that they're learning how to improve and finish. And so often we ask them to turn things in and that's the end of the story. But in a really good makerspace, they're revising and improving. All right, so myth number six is that the space doesn't matter. I used to get really frustrated when people would focus on the space and not the learning. So I would say things like, it's about the making and not the space. I mean, I think I said something similar to that just a moment ago. And I would get really frustrated when people would visit a makerspace and they would obsess over the stuff rather than the learning. I mentioned that you don't have to have fancy gadgets and devices and the best steelcase furniture and whatever else. But the truth is this, the space still matters. It matters a lot. Partly because a space is more than simply a collection of items. My kitchen is more than an assortment of beaters and spatulas and pots and pans and dishes. It's a family hub where we gravitate to when we hang out, and it's where our neighbors have been over, and we break bread together, and it's where community happens. A home is more than a frame and some drywall. A museum is more than a holding spot for painted boxes. A classroom is more than an assortment of desks and books. It's a living, breathing community. And we infuse these spaces with meaning when we interact in relationships. And the physical design and layout matter here because they are the things that help us facilitate that community. All right, final one, myth number seven. You have to be an expert in each maker-related endeavor. Look, you don't have to know how to do everything in the makerspace. You really don't. Right now, you might be thinking, I don't know how to do Scratch, or I don't know how to do circuitry, or I've never even heard of this or that. And guess what? It's okay. It really is. Because all you have to do is learn just enough to be able to teach your students. When you are open to what you don't know, you're actually modeling the learning process for your students. You're modeling curiosity. You're modeling creative risk taking. So not knowing everything is sometimes a good thing. I would recommend that you go out and try something. Spend part of this summer making something, anything. Get on Scratch and learn the beginning parts of coding. Learn how to do circuitry. Make something awesome with, you know, duct tape and cardboard. It doesn't matter, but just go make something. Develop that maker mindset yourself over the summer, and chances are you already are doing that. And then think of how you can help share that with your students. The bottom line is, you are the architect who can help develop a makerspace and design it in a way that cultivates a creative classroom community. And so when you do that, your students are different as a result. Hey, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy this podcast, would you do two different things? First of all, if you are Canadian, would you send me Crunchy Bars? Because those are the best and we don't have them in the United States. My address is, I'm just kidding. You don't need to do that, but that would be awesome. Would you do two different things? First of all, would you leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or wherever you get your podcast? And then also, would you tell a friend about this podcast and let them know? So thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.